Thank you. special thank you to the choir today for the most extraordinary music. It moves our hearts. So a love for all seasons. Did you know how much sunlight we got or we are getting today, minus the clouds out there? If there were no clouds, we'd be getting 8 hours, 12 minutes, and 1 second of sunlight. This is a time of darkness in our natural Earth cycle, or at least the darkest that our part of the planet gets, which is not really that dark. It drops at its lowest to 8 hours and just 10 minutes of sunlight on Friday. And by the time we get back here on Sunday next week, please show up, because you will have gained 7 seconds of light since Friday. But I'm getting ahead of myself. That's the sermon for next week. My point that I'm trying to make here is that this week we are at the low end of that light cycle, the low end of the Earth's rotation for our experiencing of the sun's light. It's our earthly positioning, not the generosity of the sun, that makes the difference in that quality of light. The sun, center of our universe, transforms every second 4 million tons of itself. Every second the sun throws out a huge chunk of itself into this radiant, powerful energy. Now that's really awesome to imagine. Think about that in comparison to the energy that's emitted from this tiny, fragile chalice light that represents so much. I've been thinking on the spiritual significance of this action. This time of year, we're also approaching in the Christian calendar the celebration of the Son of God. That in itself is a symbol for the significance in our souls and in our beautiful, intricate bodies of the life-giving birthing of the sun's energy. Biology, cosmology, spirituality are all one in this story of birth and life. The sun transforms itself into a gift of energy that's absorbed by our earthly plants through photosynthesis, and then the plants are consumed by animals. Along comes humans, who for 4 million years have consumed the energy of the sun by eating both the plants and the animals. What the sun gives away, we receive. What the sun offers, we depend upon for our entire existence. The Son of God and the Son of Life feed us body and soul in a dynamic, poetic, biological relationship. And so, this time of year, in the darkest of our days, we tell stories of hope that this life-supporting, life-essential energy will not continue to fade into absolute dark. And this hope is represented in the form of a newborn light, a newborn child, a baby. The story of the birth of Jesus is a simple and profound story. It is an essential story of the human journey. It's the simple story of a child being born into this world, which touches us in that innermost part of our hearts. It's also a human survival story. Like no other time in our year, this time of Christmas is a time to remember what is really important, to remember what is at the heart of our human experience and at the heart of our religious experience. We know that Christmas is not really about all that rushing around, so I invite you to take a deep breath right now and settle into this present moment, to this perfect moment. And let us remind ourselves what Christmas is really about. It is about preparing for that which has never been, Yes. Life, babies, and all that they represent. Many years ago, on my first Christmas as in an adult relationship, life was teeming with possibilities. The apartment was my dream apartment, my first in an older building just off Commercial Drive. It had hardwood floors and a view of the mountains when the clouds cleared. My partner, Eric, he didn't like Christmas. He rejected everything commercial as pointless and crass. And on the surface, I had to agree with him. But I still wanted to give gifts. I wanted to give. I wanted to be connected to my friends and my family and offer something of myself and make a little happiness. Of course, we were young and we were penniless, so we had to become creative. And I came up with the idea of creating cotton shopping bags for everyone. This was a long time ago before we were all using them. So I designed the images and Eric did the silk screening. And then on Christmas Eve day, we began to assemble the bags. Just as we got the sewing machine out, the telephone rang. It was Eric's younger sister. Or rather, it was her husband. The water had broken, and they were off to the hospital. The first baby of the next generation was on its way. With delight, and now a heightened sense of the immediate importance of life, and specifically of new life fast approaching, Eric and I began to work together to cut and sew our Christmas presents. As the daylight faded and the evening progressed, to the sound of the sewing machine and the snipping of scissors, and I can see in my memory the darkened windows reflecting the warm yellow light of the room and the flickering of candles. We waited. Eric sat at the sewing machine cutting. I cut the pieces and then handed them to him, and then he would sew up the bags. I did the finishing work of attaching the handles and cutting off the threads. And all the while that we worked, we listened to Christmas carols and held his sister in our hearts. And we waited. We waited for the phone to ring. We waited in anticipation. We waited, held in a kind of internally shared tension, hoping that all would be well and that we would soon be celebrating, yet at the same time, holding hope at bay and praying that simply all would be well. This waiting is also what these days leading up to solstice and Christmas are about. On one hand, of course, we know that the sun will return and the days will not keep getting shorter and shorter. We know rationally that this is the rhythm of the earth and the sun. And yet, there's also this deeper, primal, perhaps, ancestral memory in our bones. There are so many among us who this time of year mourn the loss of light and fear the deepening darkness and the wet and the cold and the eternal gray in those empty trees. Seasonal affective disorder is a medical term for our connection to the deeper, older relationship to earth and that loss of light. I think our bodies are partly telling us that they want to hibernate, turn inward, enter a deeper quiet, more contemplative time. Some part of us is waiting, waiting for that light to return, waiting for hope to return, waiting for love to come back again into the world. I say some part of us because there is a tension in us too between the desire to become stiller and the desire to prepare ourselves for the renewal of that light. I don't think I need to describe the latter, all the baking and the wrapping and the parties that this we're aware of. The former, the waiting, is less understood and less honored. Do you know that part in the Four Quartets by T.S. Eliot? It goes like this. I said to my soul, be still and wait without hope, for hope would be hope for the wrong thing. Wait without love, for love would be love of the wrong thing. There is yet faith, but the faith and the love are all in the waiting. Wait without thought, for you are not ready for thought. So the darkness shall be the light, and the stillness the dancing. Wise man. These days leading up to Christmas are all about that deep waiting. These days are about the great movements in our lives which we have little or no control over. Times of birth, times of death, among them. Perhaps you have other examples from your life when all you could do was wait. Those times when we cannot make happen. We must not. We cannot force them to be what we want them to be or how we want them to be. Those are times when we are asked to surrender. But not the type of surrender that means that we've failed or that we've lost something. No, this kind of surrender means that we understand that we are part of something that is greater than us. We are part of a great movement, a great natural movement between or within those forces of life and death. For these great movements, these movements of birth and death, we must be wise enough to wait. Wise and brave enough to allow ourselves to be still. And if we are courageous enough to wait without hope, for we do not know what to hope for, having never walked these paths before, and we might end up hoping for the wrong thing, and we wait with faith, and we wait with love. Faith and love are in the waiting with us. If we are still, then we will allow our souls to feed and nourish. We are waiting together through the darkening season, waiting in our souls together right now, in this moment. We are waiting in the stillness in the deepening dark. But this is not endless dark or pointless dark or unnecessary dark. This is pregnant dark. Pregnant dark held in stillness with love and faith so that that which has never been before is made ready. And we, in the waiting, are also made ready. A baby takes 9 months to form and prepare itself for our oxygen-rich world. And parents need 9 months to prepare themselves for the work of keeping another life alive. When I was pregnant for the first time, my baby's father and I would take long walks after dinner every night. And on those long walks, we would talk. We would talk about this new life coming. We'd talk about what she might be like in personality and what her preferences might be like and how we would educate her about the world and how we would respect her own being and her freedom to choose her own path. Every night, we walked and we talked as we prepared for her approaching arrival. That was how we were waiting. Waiting with faith and love for that which had never been before. The birth of a child is the most ordinary thing in the world. The most ordinary, repeated, regular, expected human activity. There are 500,000 births human births every year. And yet, like the impossibly creative creation of billions of individually unique snowflakes, so too, each child born is unto itself and to its parents, amazingly, genuinely unique, and its arrival miraculous. And this is what Christmas reminds us of. That out of that pregnant darkness comes that which has never been before. A newborn child is that symbol. And what a marvelous symbol it is. A symbol of love, born from expectant darkness, born from stillness, and out of that waiting, the child emerges. Jesus, he was that baby. And some of us never tire of that great story. And it came to pass in those days that all went to be taxed, every man to his own city where he was born. Joseph and Mary, his wife, went to the city which was called Bethlehem, and there was no room for them in the inn, for the city was crowded, and the innkeeper offered them the shelter of the stable. That night Jesus, the baby, was born, and Mary wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in the manger. Every woman who's ever had a baby knows that the details of birth, entirely missing from that particular story, are messy and wild and intense and, yes, miraculous. My sweet first baby took a long time in coming, 2 weeks late from her due date. And now I am going to contradict everything that I have said about waiting and surrendering to that important moment. Because I had got to the time when I was done with waiting. I had had enough. And I had decided that things needed to change. And a great determination came over me. I didn't go to Bethlehem. I lumbered down the new Westminster Hill to the grocery store and bought ingredients to make stew for dinner. And then I hoofed it back up that great hill, straight up 10th Avenue, which is an incline, sort of like this, as fast as I could hoof it. And by the time I'd made it to the top, the contractions had started. Now, Mary and Joseph had cows and sheep and donkeys to keep them company. I had a wonderful midwife and doctor and a great nurse. Mary and Joseph had shepherds and wise men that showed up and animals from our story to celebrate. And I had the shining faces of new grandparents. I remember after the birth, after Eric had gone out to the hospital parking lot to drink a celebratory breakfast beer with his sister, and I was wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying next to my daughter, who was also tucked in swaddling clothes next to me. And then sitting beside us was my mom, a newborn granny. This was the moment that we had all been waiting for, with hope and faith. Here was this living, breathing reminder. No, more than a reminder. Here was the very real embodiment of love. Gently breathing in this world. Love made real in each of our hearts. Here was that which had never been before. It was a first for all of us, a first daughter, a first mother, a first grandmother, and of course, there was also the first father and the first grandfather and the aunts and the uncles, the extended family and the friends, who all celebrated with us this simple, expected, anticipated, very ordinary miracle of life. And on that Christmas Eve, 2 years before that moment, 2 years earlier, after Eric and I had finished sewing up those Christmas presents and were getting ready to climb into bed, we finally got that telephone call that we had been expecting all evening, his brother-in-law calling to say that another baby had been born that Christmas Eve night, another ordinary, hoped for, anticipated miracle, another creation of love. What are we doing here this morning? We are preparing ourselves deep in our hearts for the returning of the light. We are sitting in that poetic, symbolic, and very real dark time. We are sitting together in community, in the deep stillness, waiting with hope and with faith. We are waiting together for the impending, anticipated, very ordinary miracle of love about to be reborn for the first time in the timeless movement of our souls. Love, it is worth the wait. Merry Christmas, everyone.